It's part road film and part buddy movie. But why don't the guys tell you themselves?
I really want to have a life-changing experience.
There's like dark-skinned women with green eyes and big butts, and that's a big part of this trip for me.
Well, that was Matt Kendall and Tiernan Turner talking about why they decided to ride motorcycles from Las Vegas to Rio de Janeiro. They wanted to make it to Carnival in 2009. They were film students, and they decided to make a movie of their adventure. And now, 5 years later, the film is finally being released by Cinema Libre, a documentary studio in Los Angeles. So whatever inspired the idea in their heads that they could ride motorbikes to Rio and make a movie out of it? Well, we're going to ask them. Matt Kendall joins us by phone, and in the studio is Tiernan Turner. Matt, Tiernan, welcome to KNPR.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Dave.
Tiernan Turner, let's start with you. How did you guys meet?
Matt and I met on the first day of film school in Colorado in 2003, and we just hit it off and did our first couple of projects together in production one, and wound up moving to Las Vegas together, and you know, we've been friends ever since.
Matt Kendall, what do you remember about that first meeting?
I saw Tiernan, he was wearing like this tie-dye shirt, and I was like, all right, this guy seems pretty cool.
So when you guys got out of film school, why did you decide to make a move to Las Vegas? What was it about this place that drew you?
Well, we had moved to Vegas while we were in film school. We did a year in Colorado. It was when we started film. We both were late to the film major. We didn't start out that way. So we started film school in Colorado, then moved to Las Vegas. And,
what drew you here, though?
It's, for me, it was a bigger industry, and it was kind of as close as I could get to L.A. without paying for an L.A. film school.
I think for me, I was at a, you know, the film school we went to in Colorado was pretty small and not traditional, and I was looking for a university-style campus.
6 years later, it's on the road to Carnival. How did you get the idea to make a movie of this road trip?
Well, really kind of the road trip came first, and then the film was something that both of us had always wanted to do. You know, we had graduated film school and hadn't made a feature yet, so it was kind of, you know, serendipitous.
The first scene of the movie shows doing gentle turns up and down a suburban cul-de-sac in Las Vegas. Didn't you think at some point that it was kind of foolish to go on this trip across two continents with so little experience?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. One of the guys that we ran into that was a motorcycle adventure rider said, you know what, you can learn to ride a bike over a few weeks just around town, or you can learn on a road trip. And it's, you know, and honestly, like, highway driving is generally a lot safer. The people helped us along the way. I mean, really, we felt like we couldn't get into trouble because there was someone there trying to help us. The police, on the other hand, were a little bit different.
A little bit different? How so?
They wanted our money.
Yeah.
Everywhere we went, south of Mexico, I think every single country, actually, we got a bit of a shakedown from the police. You know, the local people would always want to be our friends and help us out everywhere.
I'm sensing there are a lot of places where it doesn't sound like there was a lot of planning.
Yeah, we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants for a lot of it. It just, you know, wanted to go south, and we really didn't have much of a plan. We just had goals, really. Like, okay, maybe we can get to this town by 5 p.m. If we can't, then, you know, we'll find somewhere else to pull over.
And all the goals that we did think about, like, you know, let's try to get here by Christmas or something like that, we missed the mark by a lot.
And as we heard in the beginning, you guys were up for some adventure. Let's hear a little bit more of the film.
Just riding out of town, and Matt says, I think there's bungee jumping back there. We just pulled a Yui. So we'll check it out.
All right, and that was Tiernan Turner explaining how he and Matt Miller got distracted on the journey to Rio on motorbikes. So had you ever done bungee jumping before when you did that U-turn?
That was my first.
Yeah, mine too.
And this was bungee jumping off a cliff over a beach. Did that make it especially scary?
Nah. It was fun. It
just
was,
nah.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit. Bungee jumping for me was kind of like, I describe it as those dreams where you're falling. You know, that's what it was, just going towards the ground. And then,
on the other hand, I mean, if that's my first time bungee jumping, I'm not sure that's where I'd want to do it. I mean, I'm thinking, what happens if something goes wrong?
Yeah, what could go wrong? You know, it was over water, so.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it was over water. I suppose, yeah, cannonball after that. Then, a little bit further down the road, you get to Guatemala, and more problems popped up there. Let's hear a little bit of what happened there.
All right, outside of Tapachula, Mexico, about to cross into Guatemala. It's our first real border crossing, so hopefully it's gonna be all right. The goal today is not to get ripped off.
Okay, so at the crossing, people are standing around and charging money to help you get through the customs inspection. What would have happened if you tried to do it for yourselves?
Well, one of the problems is the lines. There's no line. You just have to shove your way to the counter. And it was our first border crossing, so we didn't know what to do. And, you know, we're still carrying our American etiquette with us. So we would have just been lost and stuck there probably all night if we hadn't had people help us. And plus the fact the officials are not very helpful. They just kind of and you know, my Spanish was good enough to get through, but they had no interest in trying to meet me halfway with the communication. But the helpers do, you know, they make every effort they can to make sure you know what's going on, and they take a piece of change.
So how frequently did you encounter other people who were doing this kind of a transcontinental trip on a motorcycle?
At least once a week we'd pass by somebody, I'd say.
Okay, so it's not like there was nobody else doing what you had done.
Right.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of people.
Yeah, there's a whole community of people out there doing it. It's mm-hmm. kind of a subculture, I think. It's mostly people that are older. People, what do you think, Matt? Maybe in their
40s, 50s.
And they've got a lot more money, and they've planned it much better than we did.
It's a huge, huge journey. How much time did this whole thing take before you get down to Rio?
2.5 months traveling. Mm-hmm. 69 days to be precise.
How many days were you riding, and how many days were you kind of waiting things out or just taking a break?
Well, Panama was kind of the longest wait. We took a little bit of time to be able to figure out how to get out of there on a flight and still get to Rio on time.
Yeah, I think we were in Panama a solid week because they only ship motorcycles one day a week, and we just missed it by a day when we got there. So I think we had to stay a full week, but probably, I mean, I'd say about at least 60% of the days we were actually traveling, and then 40% of the days we were just staying put.
So what do you do when you're biding your time? You're waiting, what, 5-6 days or so in Panama to get the bike across and continue on. I mean, how do you, because surely you don't have 5 or 6 days worth of reading or 5 or 6 days worth of entertainment packed away on the motorcycle, right?
You go and enjoy the place where you're at. Like we would always like try and hook up with couch surfers, and there's couch surfers that don't even, you know, they're not, maybe they don't have a couch to lend, but you can call them up and hang out and get like a little bit of a tour guide.
Yeah, in Panama City, we had a couch surfing host that we were staying with. She took us around, and we went to the Panama Jazz Festival, for instance. And then we met other couch surfers. I was trying to meet girls, you know, to see the sights.
How did that go?
We were trying to learn how to surf.
How did the girl meeting process go?
Oh, I met a lot of girls. Uh-huh. Some of them nicer than others.
How are you filming all of this as you're going along? I mean, how did you capture all of this as part of the journey?
It was a challenge. It's funny when we went back through the footage because we had a ton of footage of stuff that wasn't that great, you know, not that interesting. For the scenes that were the most interesting, we have the least footage because that's the hardest time to film. You know, for instance, at the borders, the officials don't like you putting a camera in their face. Or when we were, there's a scene in Argentina where we were nearly stranded out in the middle of nowhere with no water, running out of gasoline. It's getting dark and there's a thunderstorm approaching us. But that's one of the best scenes in the movie. But at the same time, we have very little footage of it because we were going through that struggle at the same time.
It's got to be difficult to go through these adventures and experiences while simultaneously filming yourself going through these adventures and experiences.
Yeah, I mean, our technique evolved through the course of the trip, too. Like, at first, you know, just to film the riding itself, we mounted a camera to the bike. But about halfway through the trip, we realized it works much better just to have it around your neck and pick it up and shoot while you're riding, which is probably less safe, but at the same time, it worked out a lot better for the footage.
In addition to the road, you didn't just do the Pan American Highway and such. You did some off-road things as well. And one of the side trips that you took was through a place called the Darien Gap. And for those of us who are not familiar with it, tell us about the Darien Gap.
There's no road. It just doesn't exist.
It just does not exist. Just right. Kind of between the two countries.
Right. And I think it's...
So how do you get around that?
There's a few ways people do it. And we chose to fly because we were a little short on time. Rio had always been the goal in the trip, and we kind of did anything to make that happen.
So where did you fly? Did you fly like just over to Colombia, or did you go further than that?
Matt?
We flew to Chile, flew into Santiago, and then from there crossed over the Andes into Argentina. And that was probably, yeah, that's That was one of the better stories of the trip, is trying to cross the Andes via a dirt road, which I'm still not convinced went all the way through. But
what? Yeah, no, there too. For those of us who've never experienced the Andes, I talk about that mountain range because it's a bigger mountain range than the Rockies, isn't it? I mean, there are some incredibly high peaks.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, much
and rough roads.
Much taller.
And just dirt roads you got to get over?
A lot of the trip we had taken paved roads and highways, and I was always looking for the adventure challenge. So I found this road looking at a satellite image on Google Maps, and I said, why don't we go that way instead? You know, that looks a little more fun. And, yeah, so we took that road, and we didn't actually make it. We got turned around. And we're forced to take the highway.
What was the obstacle?
It was the road was actually owned by a mining company. We rode up this road for a while. It was a pretty challenging ride. And when we got there, the mining company told us that we weren't allowed to.
They turn you around.
They turned us around. Yeah. So we kind of went back with our tail between our legs. Went back to Santiago, partied for another day, and then moved on.
Well, we've got a clip of that experience, and let's hear a little bit of that now.
Matt must be hating me right now.
It's the most intense thing I've ever done, dude.
This is ridiculous.
And if we get hurt out here or anything happens, like, there's nothing within miles.
Okay, so what made that the most intense thing you've ever done? What made it so intense?
You kind of had to be there to see it. I don't think the footage quite does it justice. The road was really steep and loose gravel, and our bikes had street tires and were overloaded with luggage. You could see it a little bit in the footage, but it was a struggle to move forward. We were probably not well prepared to cross the Andes on and off the highway road.
As fairly new bikers as well.
And you can see it in the footage in that scene. Mm-hmm. We're a little new. We're struggling.
But on the other hand, isn't that the kind of crazy adventure that this whole film and that whole trip was ultimately about?
Yeah, I think the lack of preparation is something personally that I'm proud of. I think that's a good way to go about doing things. You know, if you spend too much time analyzing and planning, you're going to get less things done.
Which of you was the more cautious? Matt Kendall, was it you or was it Tiernan?
I'd definitely be the more cautious one.
Was that ever like a tension point where Tiernan wants to do something a little more adventurous and you're saying, nah, let's stick to the main road?
Yeah, there's a scene in Antigua, in Guatemala, where we wanted to go over, what was it, Honduras, some road in Honduras. And we kind of were butting heads about that, and I didn't want to go, and we decided we were going to go, but then, you know, we got lost and couldn't find the road.
Did you guys ever argue? I mean, the arguments ever got to bust out, or did you just kind of go along with it, maybe go back and forth with one another?
We did have some moments out there, like any long-term relationship, I suppose. But we didn't really film it. Not really in the movie.
Yeah.
But you know, we'd get at each other about the pace of it. Like there was tensions building throughout the trip because we were together 24 hours a day for a long time. So at one point, Matt, if you remember in Santiago, we were arguing about the pace. You know, like whether or not we're going too fast or too slow, and you know, but pretty much everything, we were reasonable enough that we could talk it out and figure it out, and there was nothing we held against each other, I don't think, at the end of the trip.
Near the end of the movie, there are some scenes where you actually sound maybe a little bit disappointed. I want to play a clip from that right now.
Trip's almost over. What are you thinking right now?
Thinking we didn't get into any big adventures. This was a lot of fun and randomness, but not a lot of real challenge.
How would it have been challenging?
It would have been a challenge riding-wise, but I would have fallen off the bike.
Now, I got to ask, not a lot of real challenge. It sounds like you had plenty of real challenges to me.
But yeah, looking back on it, certainly, yeah. At the time, I remember thinking, I don't know, I had this vision of the trip, you know, where I'd be chased by Colombian FARC rebels or something, you know, through the jungle. But
the bullets whizzing by your head as you're riding away.
I think that's kind of what I imagined might happen before leaving on the trip.
But, as you look back on it now, was the trip too easy? Did it sort of fall short of what your expectations were?
No, and in fact, it's funny, in the film, after that clip where I'm saying how disappointed I am, basically everything that I had asked for came true the next day, literally. It was kind of poetic how that happened.
Was Carnival an anticlimax, Matt Kendall?
I think so. I mean, in a way it was, because really that town in Londrina when Tiernan's bike broke down and we're, you know, on the side of the road with like no way of getting out of there. We kind of had one of the most memorable experiences of my life, and it's hard to top that. It's not to say that, you know, Carnival wasn't great or wasn't amazing, but the trip and that experience in Londrina was pretty pinnacle.
And I think too, part of the point of the movie is that it's about the journey, not the destination. And that
it sounds like the journey was the destination in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean,
which is a good road trip. That's,
yeah, it's funny. We got a lot of footage, and we actually flew a camera guy out to film the two of us to get so we could see both of us on screen for Carnival. But then when we got to editing the movie, I mean, that was just, you know, maybe 30 seconds of screen time. You know, we didn't really want to show too much of it because, the movie had already climaxed at that point.
So, you know, now you got this film. It took you 5 years to get it together. Are you happy with it?
I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, it's a great first effort. And it's most excited about it in the documentary sense that it's not, we didn't have an agenda going out filming it originally. Like, I feel a lot of documentaries go out with, you know, we're going to prove this or we're going to show that. And, you know, we went out just on a trip and weren't expecting to make a buddy comedy, but it ended up that way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very proud that the film is honest. You know, we showed exactly what happened, kind of as it happened. We didn't change very much, maybe crunched time or something like that, but we never faked anything. You know, the whole movie is real, and you can get to know us pretty quickly by watching it.
Hmm. So what's next? Will a release of Ride Report help your careers in the film industry?
Hope so.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, hopefully it leads to more films, more projects.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a process. It takes a long time to get good at making films, you know. So this was the first step, and I think we did a pretty good job, and we both learned a lot. So from here, you know, I think our next film is going to be even better. If we can come up with a good enough concept, similar, you know, it's hard to beat riding motorcycles to South America, but whatever we do, I'm sure it'll turn out better. And now we have a relationship with the distribution company. So I think, you know, we might even be able to get funding for the next one, because we kind of did this one with, you know, no money that, you know, the money we'd saved working for 2 years out of college, you know, so we didn't have a lot of money. So next time maybe it'll be better funded.
How much did it cost?
The film or the trip?
The film. Well, the film, I'm assuming the trip.
It's kind of all together.
Yeah, rolled together.
I think we spent, to shoot it and to do the trip and everything, we spent about $15,000 each. It's funny, you know, filmmakers never like talking about money for some reason. You go to film festivals and it's something somebody always asks, and it's one of those questions that's always dodged. But
is that one of those things you could kind of take some pride in? I mean, maybe a perverse sense of pride is that there aren't a lot of zeros in that budget, but
right.
You still produced a film.
Yeah, I'd say that's the budget that most people do without actually making a movie. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get it done real cheaply, relatively. Some people, I tell them that, they say that's, you know, they it sounds like a lot of money to them, but anybody who's made a film knows that that's nothing at all.
Tierna Turner and Matt Kendall, thank you both so much for joining us. Great talking to you.
Thanks for having us.
Tierna Turner and Matt Kendall took a road trip to Rio in 2009 to go to Carnival, and out of that came a film of the trip called Ride Report. We've got a link to where you can get it on our website, knprnews.org.